two parallel lines, written by Khao Tonk and read by Sunkitten Shash, an Only Friends fanfiction, rated teen. Summary. It wasn't that Boston was free from blame. Far from it. He was absolutely mostly to blame. But Boston's very transgression there proved the rule. Boston, when caught, didn't lie. Author's notes. I don't think we'll have time to get this in canon, so here's my little desperate hope for a conversation I need Boston and Ray to have. Anyway, I have a lot of thoughts about them. I'm just incredibly inarticulate, and this is the best I can do. Partially born of an unyielding need for someone to refuse to shame Boston for enjoying sex. I know I could have been a better man, but I always had to have the upper hand. I'm struggling to see the better side of me, but I can't take all your jabs and talk. Tell me I'm a wreck. You say that I'm a mess. How could you expect anything less? You latched onto me, then cried how strong you were alone. Caught. Boston was honest. That was the thought that went through Ray's head, over and over like a one-track record. Maybe it was the therapy that meant he'd gotten tired of thinking about his own flaws, and there was only so much thinking about sand he could do before he wanted to burst. But Boston's behavior had become a silent movie in his head. Throughout everything, through all of Boston's shenanigans, he'd obfuscate and misdirect, but when confronted directly, he'd tell the truth. He'd tell the truth to his own advantage when he had no stake in it. He'd tell it unvarnished in order to make it hurt and take attention off of himself. He'd tell it like a sledgehammer in place of more delicate instruments. But he'd tell the truth. It had been simply a facet of Boston's personality, something their little group had accepted until it turned inward. A sense of humor sometimes a little too acerbic to be funny, a wit sharp enough to cut at times, his stories always provoking a strange sense of sort of schadenfreude. None of them had had a real problem with it, until Top, until Nick, until Sand, until Adam. Boston had lured Top away. Sure, it had likely been out of juvenile jealousy over a friend having something he wanted, like a child who finished their sweets too early and saw a sibling still had some. It had been a misguided, ridiculous need to have, to not be missing out. It had been wrong, for a given value of wrong, but he'd done it, and he'd done it effortlessly. Ray didn't believe Boston did anything without a reason. It just happened that more often than not, those reasons were self-serving in the utmost. But they rarely affected the group. Boston had never, not until Top and Mew were introduced, come close to jeopardizing their friendships. So it couldn't just be that Boston wanted what Mew had. And it couldn't just be that Boston wanted to destroy Mew. There were far easier ways to destroy Mew, for one. For another, Mew's quiet aura of superiority was balanced neatly by Boston simply not giving a fuck. They disagreed, fundamentally at times, but Mew saw Boston as beyond redemption, and Boston saw Mew as irredeemably boring. So, neither wasted their breath arguing about it. It could have even been deep, deep, deep down, a desire to protect Mew and, by extension, their group. Boston knew Top, knew his pattern. 3 months and done. Boston had introduced them, oscillating wildly between contributing to the hostel project, offering Mew an outlet for what Boston perceived as sexual repression with someone he knew would get the job done, and the realization that Top took Mew's coyness as a personal challenge. It could have been that, subconsciously or not, Boston had realized that Top and Mew could only end in disaster, and Mew would be the more hurt. Pragmatically speaking, even if Boston didn't care if Mew got hurt, he did care in his own way about their group as a whole. Misguided or not, the one thing Boston knew better than even his cameras was his body. Sex. Boston pursued sex like it was a prey animal. He knew people like they were intimate portraits in an album. He might have introduced Mew and Top for a bit of a laugh, but he'd noticed Top behaving differently than just a hookup, and he'd intervened. It hadn't been a good way of intervening, but to Boston's mind, it had probably actually been the most straightforward. Mew wouldn't take a telling. They'd been friends for 4 years. They'd all long known that Mew wouldn't believe something without evidence. Boston had seen, had been victim to, more likely, dozens of examples of the I-can-fix-him effect, and when he'd seen it in Mew, he'd done everything in his power to show him otherwise. So he'd seduced Top, with a laughable ease. It wasn't that Boston was free from blame. Far from it. He was absolutely mostly to blame, but Boston's very transgression there proved the rule. Boston, when caught, didn't lie. His execution left much to be desired, sure, but he'd been completely correct when he'd told Sand that Ray was still hung up on Mew. He hadn't erred, hadn't misspoken. He'd been out of line by approximately 4 zillion miles, yes. Had done it to hurt Ray, yes. To keep Ray from having something he himself didn't, yes. But he'd been right. He'd been honest. He recognized it, because it was the same thing that had Ray lashing out that one night at YOLO. He was honest in the same way most broken people like them were honest, using bluntness as a shield to keep anyone from looking deeper. That was a realization Ray had come to in therapy, and he'd walked out of that session kind of mad about it. Boston made sense to him. Twisted though it was, there was logic there. Cold and vicious, but with Boston's only example of a role model being his father, a businessman and a womanizer, a party politician obsessed with outward appearance, was it any wonder Boston was the same? Boston only knew how to hurt to heal. Nothing in Boston's life was gentle, so tenderness became weakness, and Boston knew only toughness in place of strength. It made sense, too, that he'd reacted so strongly to Nick. Nick had all the hallmarks of a dewy-eyed plaything, all the soft naivete, but what kept Boston coming back was all of the interesting little ways he'd break that illusion. That, and he was good in bed. Ray knew all about Boston's conquests, had listened to the sordid details time and time again over drinks, over lunch, between lectures. Boston was as casual about sex as Mew was about books. Ray knew about, if not all, then most of Boston's hookups, so he'd known about Nick from the start. He'd known that Nick had been the one to initiate the fling, had hooked up with him in his family's shop. He'd known that Nick's apparent innocence was like a puzzle to Boston, because it was so at odds with his actions. With Mew still reeling from Top, Ray's ping-ponging between figuring out his feelings for Sand and throwing himself into abject alcoholism, and Nick desperately trying to put himself back together, None of them had seen Adam coming. That was part of what had made Ray mad about Boston's honesty. It wasn't Boston, wasn't the honesty. It was himself. It was them. Boston had stood and taken Nam Chum's abuse, Mew's snide remarks, and Ray had watched the fight leave him. It had been funny until it wasn't funny anymore, and Ray hadn't done a damn thing. He'd watched the anger and hurt rise and be pushed down, locked away behind Boston's forced stoicism. He'd watched Nam Chum slap him. Ray had done nothing, and that's what he'd gotten mad about. Part of recovery was making amends, Ray knew. He'd read the leaflets, listened to the talks. There was no set order, no checklist, no guarantee. Boston had no reason to forgive his inaction. But then, Boston was so fucked up that he might just be puzzled by the concept of being apologized to. Still, he had to try. Ray waited outside the gates, folding his arms around himself and trying to look casual. Anxiety thrummed at the base of his throat. He'd come alone for this. Hadn't told anyone. Hadn't truly thought he'd go through with it until he'd seen his own hand reaching for the gate bell. There was plenty of time to escape, to reconsider. Depending on where Boston was, it could take him minutes to get to the gate. He stayed. Boston arrived, and they stared at one another from between the slats, before Boston pulled it open, wary. "Hey," Ray said. "Have you eaten?" Boston blinked at him, eyebrows doing a complicated little crinkle, before he tilted his head, shoulders relaxing. "I have," he said, eyes still flicking around like he expected the others to turn up. "Do you want to come in?" Ray followed him inside, found that all of his carefully rehearsed words had abandoned him as he tried to figure out what he was supposed to say, how he was supposed to start. They reached the kitchen, and Boston poured him a drink. Ray took it, but forced himself not to acknowledge the glass. Boston leaned against the counter, arms crossing, eyes assessing. "I'm here to apologize," Ray said, clearing his throat and meeting Boston's eyes. "I'm sorry." True surprise seemed to flicker on Boston's face, but he didn't say anything, eyebrows rising. Ray placed the glass down without looking at it, sucked his teeth, and let out a breath he'd been holding. "We have a history of kicking each other when we're down, but Chum went too far. Whatever happened with you and Adam, that's between you and Adam. It's not fair that we ganged up on you, and it's not fair that Chum decided for all of us that you're out of the project."
"It was her little brother. I knew she'd be pissed and did it anyway. I'm an awful, terrible, no good slut, remember?"
"Fuck off, I'm trying to tell you I don't care," Ray said automatically. And Boston's smirk put him at ease, because he was apologizing, but they were still them. "You were bound to fuck someone we cared about at some point. The population of Thailand isn't that big." Boston's smirk widened at that. This was nowhere near how the apology was meant to go, but it felt better than any of the words that Ray had been trying to script out in his head. "Ton, we're friends, right? Still?"
"Whatever friends means to us, sure."
Boston's posture had lost a lot of its defensiveness, but he still held himself perfectly still, his voice still deceptively light.
"If you can handle perfect princesses Nam Chum and Mew looking down on you for associating with riffraff like me."
Ray laughed. Not with ill intent, but because those words bounced around somewhere dark in his head. I'm riffraff too, remember? Useless, angry, drunk, and dirty, no-good slut. We're a perfect pair. They'll get pissed at me, but then at least they're pissed at both of us. Boston's mouth curled in what might have been a smile if he'd let it happen. His eyes dropped to the glass and then went to Ray. You don't seem very drunk. Ray shrugged. I'm trying not to be.
Does that mean I have to try to not be a slut?
Fuck no, Ray said immediately, alarmed at the very prospect. A celibate Boston felt inherently wrong somehow. Maybe just try not fucking anyone's boyfriends or family members.
So, he said slowly, all sly. Sans off the table, then?
Ray smiled at him with all his teeth, and it felt good, because his understanding of Boston went both ways. If you touch sand, they'll never find your body. Boston relaxed entirely, grinning back at him. If there was anyone on Earth who understood that Ray meant it with every fiber of his being, it was Boston. If there was anyone on Earth who understood Ray's flirtation with obsession, it was Boston.
Hey, I can't help.
Never, Tawn. There'll be true crime podcasts in 50 years still talking about your unsolved disappearance. Boston snickered, but he relented, smile fading a little.
I really did just do what Adam asked. He wanted it.
I know. And he did. Boston looked faintly surprised at the easy acceptance. You fucked up with what you did with Top and Mew, but you've never otherwise been interested in people who aren't interested. I should have said that.
There was no point. They'd picked their narrative.
Ray shrugged. Doesn't mean I shouldn't have pointed it out anyway. Because he'd have been pointing it out for Boston to hear it, not Mew or Chuum. He'd have been pointing it out so that Boston had half a chance to realize someone was still on his side. Boston swiped the drink off the counter and dumped it unceremoniously down the sink, instead grabbing a couple of bottles of soda from the fridge and beginning to lead the way to somewhere they could sit down, hang out like they used to. Anyway, the hostel is technically mine, so you should come back. I'll talk to Mew. He'll talk to Chum. He's harder for her to ignore. Ray accepted a soda and took a chair, while Boston settled into a sprawl on the couch. He eyed the drink dubiously, but he really did want to try cutting back on the drinking, even if it was mostly motivated by wanting to remember every moment Sand looked at him the way that he did. He took a sip. Perhaps one day he'd be doing it for himself, but for the moment, each drink that didn't have any alcohol in it conjured up Sand's slow, spreading smile, the lift of his eyebrows when he was trying desperately not to look pleased. Boston watched him with an air of slightly baffled amusement, probably for the grimace he was giving the bottle, even as he took another sip.
This is a weird version of you.
I started seeing a therapist, said Ray, with a shrug he hoped looked casual. Someone told me to get one. A lazy grin slid over Boston's face, like he'd just figured it out.
You really are whipped, huh? It's gonna be worse than it was with Mew. At least this one likes you back.
Dick, Ray said, laughing. He took another drink and smiled, and didn't bother arguing. Boston was honest, after all. The end.